Yeah. It's good stuff, that two turntables and a microphone.
All right. It's Tuesday afternoon. Wow. Can you say it's Tuesday afternoon and not think of the Moody Blues?
I can, because I'm not a big Moody Blues fan, but you know.
Yeah.
Is that a guilty pleasure from your childhood, the Moody Blues?
From high school, probably.
Okay. Yeah. I have a friend who has a severely autistic brother, younger brother, who is obsessed with the Moody Blues.
I had never heard of them. I was introduced to them by a friend in high school named Skylar, who was a drummer. And actually, he could play a lot of instruments. Really into prog rock. And in fact, he and a bunch of friends formed a band called Cinema.
And, that's a good
band
name.
They would do like Yes covers and King Crimson covers and Moody Blues covers.
Okay.
So that's where I first learned about the Moody Blues.
Stuff You Should Know, Josh and Chuck always, whenever they come up with some silly wording or something, Chuck will go, that's a good band name.
Right.
Makes a note of it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were good. Cinema.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's Tuesday afternoon. It's 2:09 on the East Coast. They're 2:10.
2:10.
Yeah. On the East Coast. And this is episode 276 of On Taking Pictures. Your favorite weekly photography show.
Yep.
I hope it's your favorite. You know what? I would be happy if we were in the top three podcasts that you
of any five, particular person.
Top five podcasts that you listen to. That would thrill me beyond measure.
Because you know, it seems like there's more and more podcasts by the day.
Some good shows out there too.
There are. And then I've been listening to this other one, which shall remain nameless because I'm going to make a slightly critical comment about it. But it's this actress who's hanging out at a museum and talking to famous people about different like periods of art and stuff. But the way they talk about it, it's like a little, they're speaking down to the audience in a way, you know? And it just kind of irked me to the point where I was like, yeah, I can't listen to this. You know, it was a little bit like, oh, we're a little too cute for words, you know? And I, Jeffrey, not too cute for words.
Not too cute for words. No. Yeah. No, no, no. What's the opposite of too cute for words?
Jeffrey that's and Bill. Us. On taking pictures. That's us.
On taking pictures. So Bill is in Brooklyn. I am in Silver Spring.
Yep.
And So I've been looking at web hosts.
Okay.
WordPress hosts.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, what a racket the hosting review game is.
Nowhere is the
ridiculousness of the internet more apparent than in searching for a web host, because you can go to, you know, X trusted review site or review hell or, you know, web hosting nerds.com, whatever it is.
Right.
And they all say something different.
I mean,
and they all, you know,
are
X
they all that
the
different?
I don't know. I had an experience with a host.
Okay.
I was going to sign up for a new host, and I won't mention them by name because I just won't do it. But I signed up, or thought I signed up. Their sign up process crashed. Just got the spinning throbber on
sure.
the screen. And it just stayed there. But it pre-authorized
your credit card.
The credit card, but it pre-authorized double the amount that it should have.
Not a good sign.
Not a good beginning. So So I called them.
Check, please.
Yeah. I called them and say, hey, here's what happened. They said, well, let's look it up by domain. Can't find it. Well, let's look it up by your last name. Can't find it. Let's look it up by email address. Can't find it. Let's look in our PayPal transactions. Can't find it. There's no record of me anywhere in their system.
So they charge you before they create any sort of account?
Yes. They pre-authorize to make sure that you've got the money. And this was on the 5th or the 6th. Anyway.
The whopping, whatever, $10 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, but, but you know, it's 270 something, you know, whatever dollars, because you're doing the whole year and it charged me twice.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it.
So, I talked to three different people. Nobody could find anything. And they said, well, send an email. So I sent an email on,
I think, call your credit card company and say, this is BS. Cancel this thing.
Well, I call, and they said, well, if it's not collected on in 5 days, it'll automatically drop off.
Okay.
But then I go back to their site, this host, and it was either a 503 or a 504. Their whole site's gone.
What? They like disappeared?
Yeah,
they were like a fly-by-night service?
No. They
took your $240 and ran.
Yeah, that's right. It was actually being hosted from a VW Vanagon. He just unplugged and left.
They just needed gas money and a new alternator.
It's one of the bigger shared hosting companies.
Okay.
And the site was completely down. So I called today and I said, hey, is there any progress on this? I'd like to get, and he's like, well, there are hundreds of tickets ahead of you.
Yeah. Get in line, Sidoris.
That's not a good sign either.
Yeah.
So I call back and I spoke to, my credit card company and spoke to a terrific customer service rep who said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and release the funds back. Chances are they're not going to collect on it if there's no record of you in their system. But we'll flag the account just in case. And if it comes up, we'll take care of it.
Sure.
Don't worry about it. But it was not a confident first transaction. So I'm looking at other things and, you know, again, it's like, this host is the best. No. This host sucks. This one's the best. No. This one, you know, and it's, should it be that difficult?
No. And you know, what's surprising to me is that in many ways, most of the ones that I've ever played with are very similar to one another, right? I mean, most of them are all like cPanel based and the back end and, you know, they're all like the same tools and the same whatever. And it's like, wait a minute, is this all just one big company with like 43 Hydra heads? You know?
Well, I will tell you, you're not far off, Bill.
Okay.
There is a company called EIG that, here, let me see.
They own like every single one that I've heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. They own, here, just a few. I'll go down alphabetically. Oh, I'm not going to read them all, but they own Bluehost. They own HostGator.
Which I have a thing with. Yeah.
Yeah. They own Fast Domain. They own iPage. They own, all of these giant hosts are owned by the same company. And, you know, depending on who you read, they've got some interesting business practices when it comes to your personal information.
Sure.
Or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if you host with one and think, oh, I'm leaving HostGator and I'm going to go host with Bluehost.
You're just moving it to the same company.
It's just a different bucket in the same thing, right?
What about hosting directly with WordPress, because they do their own hosting now, right? If you really want WordPress,
yeah, they've unlocked and now you can use third party plugins. I've been with, like, Faded and Blurred was on Bluehost, and so I've been a Bluehost customer since 2008, and knock wood, I've had very few problems with the actual site.
Yeah.
But it seems like the reviews of them lately are just tanking.
Okay.
And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's, you know, people are getting, you know, connected to a bad customer service rep. I will say that just yesterday they launched a whole new WordPress platform that they've been working on for like 6 months. So I don't know. But again, now you're part of this one company that owns, I think, 60 different web hosting companies.
Yep.
So yeah. do you trust that they're just the conglomerate and all the other companies are still doing their own independent thing, or do you leave them? And I got to tell you, I mean, I love Squarespace for what it is.
Yep.
But a couple of the things that I want to do moving forward fall outside of that ecosystem.
Sure.
And as you know, that gets real tricky real quick.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
If you can even do it, right?
Yeah.
So it's, it's just a, it's a weird, and you thought picking a camera was hard. Jeez.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
You're never going to set up this site.
Well, and no, I mean, and this is the thing, right? The book is done. The ebook and the iBook are done. The shirts, the new bunch of like 7 new t-shirt designs, those are done. I just need a place to put them. That's it.
Right.
So
right.
Anyway.
Hey, just for when you say that the hosting reviews, a lot of them are weird link bait sites, right? Sort of
sure.
Like these weird clickbait sites.
A lot of these companies have affiliate links.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they're going to put, you know, 10 different reviews and, oh, well, you know, coincidentally, these are all, I don't know how, it's sort of like what Amazon reviews have become.
Yeah.
You know,
I
got this product for free, but this is my unbiased review. Well, is it though?
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. I wonder what the answer is for you.
I don't know. If anybody's got any clues, I want to get this thing done like today, tomorrow. The idea was I wanted to launch everything on the 9th because that's the 2-year anniversary of when I got to DC.
Okay.
But I don't know if that
would be
tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's really, I mean, look, the copy's all written for the site. The layout is probably 80-90% done. I know where I want things and what I want. I just need the bucket to put it in.
Yeah.
And you know, I may end up in the interest of time, I may end up using Bluehost because it's familiar and
yeah, it's already there. Sure.
Really had that, you know, have had that many problems with it.
Now let me ask you a sort of nerdy question. Do you, cause a lot of these, I know that in HostGator, probably in Bluehost too, you can instantiate WordPress in a sort of automated fashion.
Right.
Versus, say, uploading the exploded zip that you download from WordPress.org.
Which way do you go? You know, I typically, because I haven't had to install WordPress for a while, the installs that I've had have been, you know, several years ago, but a lot of these companies now are doing these one-click installs, and you can choose subfolders, and it does a lot of the heavy lifting in the back.
Yep.
And then it maintains, you know,
well,
security.
Going and setting and up a database and coming up with a name and a password. Yeah.
Yeah. So, moving forward, I will probably let it do its thing. You know, there's another thing is if you're hosting multiple sites, do you put one in the root, or do you keep everything in subfolders and leave the root clean and just put like the index.php and the htaccess file in the root, but keep everything else clean?
WilliamGeorgeWadman.com, which used to be where I hosted BillWadman.com before I moved it to Squarespace, so I didn't have to deal with all this stuff, is in the root, and then 365 portraits.com and ontakingpictures.com and a bunch of other like little stuff that I have are all in subfolders underneath that.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's the way I did it. It's all, I mean, it is nice to have a host where you can have a bunch of domains with different sites on one server.
Absolutely.
Although it does get confusing and complicated if you get too deep, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what some of the servers will allow you to do is actually have different cPanel, for each one. So you can kind of keep them,
paying extra,
more or less locked down. I think it depends on the host.
Man, this week in web hosting.
Right. Anyway.
Anyway.
It's just been an interesting little thing. So if you get podcast at ontakingpictures.com, I tweeted out a request asking what people used. And there are some interesting choices. WP Engine was one. I think it looks good. It seems like it's a little expensive for what you're getting, given what's on the playing field. But you know, it may be a situation where you get what you pay for.
It's a third party WordPress specific hosting company.
Yeah. But there's also like DreamHost is another one that's been pretty good. A2 Hosting is another one that's come highly recommended. Although they
is a good preamble to a little conversation that I have been thinking about, sort of under my breath in my head for a while.
Sure. Do it.
Which is just this idea of, you know, this perpetual slow change of technology, right? That we deal with every day, right? So I was listening to, I guess it was Twit or something the other day, and somebody was on the show and they said that they went to Columbia Journalism School in 2001 and they had just moved back from Japan because they lived in Japan for a couple of years, and they had a Japanese phone, which at the time had a camera in it, where a lot of American phones didn't have cameras in 2001, right? You know, that was an odd thing to have in a phone. And the journalism professor's first question in class was, do you think that news media will ban reporters from using digital cameras because they're so manipulatable? And the idea was, you remember when O.J. Simpson was put on the cover of Time and Newsweek, it was the same shot, but Time or Newsweek, I forget which one, darkened it down and like made it way more contrasty and kind of mm-hmm, made him look like mm-hmm. a more menacing kind of shot.
Right. Kind of like the, what was the photographer's name that did the photos of McCain? And they, yes. were, they were so harshly lit.
Yeah. What was her name?
Oh my gosh, what was her name? She spoke at the Annenberg. Jill Greenberg.
Jill Greenberg. Right. Yeah, that kind of thing, right? And it was this interesting thing. And the girl on the podcast, the woman said, you know, and I held up my phone that I brought back from Japan, which had a phone or a camera in it, and was saying, you know, hey, they're already in phones. Like this is going to be ubiquitous. It's just irrelevant for this question even to be asked. Of course they're going to be using digital stuff. And mm-hmm. apparently the professor said, mark my words, like, you know, the New York Times will never, ever print a picture from a digital camera, like on the front page or whatever it is, right? Yeah, exactly, right? But of course, you know, you and I laugh about it, right? But you and I, 20 years from now, will be the old guy saying, they'll never do XYZ, right? You know?
Right, right.
And even like in your web hosting conversation, I went from hand coding my own static pages to hand coding my own PHP pages, to right. using WordPress for some things, to using Flash for a bunch of stuff. You know, you and sure. I built a lot yeah. of Flash stuff over the years,
yeah.
right?
Very similar path,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, and then now I have it on a somewhat automated backend thing that is HTML, but who knows in 10 years where the web's going to be, if the web's going to be here at all, right? So mm-hmm, we're mm-hmm. constantly shifting over time. Same thing with cameras, right? It was serious photographers were using film, even when digital cameras first came out. And how many analog, so-called analog photographers held on to film as long as they could and then either left the business or finally switched to digital, or and then there's the people going back to it, right? Like all these ebbs and flows and sort of the tide goes in and out. I just think it's interesting when I tend to jump on the new thing. I tend to jump on the new thing earlier, at least I used to, and now I feel like I don't like jumping on the new thing all the time. You know, and I don't know if it's age, you know, mm-hmm. some sort of level of weird professional maturity. Like I found the niche where it's like, oh, I like digital cameras, but I don't like EVFs, right? Like, you know, the stupid thing that I complain about.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I don't know. I mean, I you and I have had very similar in terms of digital media paths. I think my reluctance to be an early adopter is the same reason that I, you know, grew weary of the whole Hackintosh thing. I just don't want to tinker with that kind of stuff. I don't want to have to
right.
to deal with the growing pains of an object or a technology or a platform. You know, I would rather it at least have a few more of the kinks worked out before it gets to me.
Absolutely. And it's funny, it's ironic that in some ways having my site say on Squarespace now, part of the reason I'm doing it is that because there are tinkering, there's far more tinkering I found in WordPress, as much more broadly powerful as it is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more tinkering involved. I mean, you sure. and I've been on the phone with you for hours talking about, you know, Faded and Blurred when you'd be switching themes and you and I would be discussing little tinkers you were making and stuff.
Why
right?
doesn't this do this?
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
It's a comma that's out of place or it's a semicolon in the wrong spot.
Right. And what does this say about us as humans? I mean, there's all these people who, you know, I think I mentioned Scott Bourne was on some show I was listening to the other week and, you know, he switched and sold all of his Canon or Nikon big heavy things and now he shoots Olympus or whatever it is, you know, and he's getting mm-hmm. great pictures. But he needed to do it because his doctor said, you need to go to a smaller camera because your back's too bad or whatever it is. You can't be carrying
right,
this stuff
right.
around. But for some people, it's like, I don't want to change the thing that the tools that I use work just fine, But if you and I were still building Flash sites for creative purposes, even now, it's like, well, Flash is going to be gone in 2 years, right? Adobe says they're going to shut it down by 2020, right?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, you should open source that because look at all the stuff that's been made that's not going to be readable anymore or whatever it is, right? Like everything goes away eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't jump on the new thing all the time. I remember a friend of mine, when they switched to Intel, bought the last PowerPC iMac because right. he remembered the transition to right. PowerPC, and he was just like, or no, to OS X, that's what it was. And he was
from 9, it took 2 years.
He's like, I should have just stayed on OS 9 for another 2 years until they got the kinks worked out of OS 10, you know?
Yeah.
And I think as things go forward, I am more reticent to jump on the bandwagon of whatever the new thing is for reasons, right? You know, the reasons why it's supposed to be so good. I'm always like, well, there's always something bad about it, right? If it was so great, mm-hmm. everyone would be doing it instantly, you know?
Well, and I think one of the other things is each time the new thing comes out, even when, well, let's keep it into photography for now.
Sure.
It's presented as the end product is going to be markedly better than what you're used to.
Sure. Yeah.
And
most of the time.
Oftentimes,
right?
But oftentimes it's not that much better. I mean, it's better in certain situations.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If you took my camera, say, from today and dropped it off in 1997 instead of 2017 into some guy's hands who used a Hasselblad or whatever it is, they'd be like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like this, look at this thing, puts out these amazing files. Maybe, yeah.
But I mean, it depends. If you handed them an 8x10 from that Hasselblad and an 8x10 from your camera, they could just as easily go, so, and?
Yeah, well, right.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
right,
it's
right.
faster and I can shoot.
Yeah, it's faster.
You know, things,
I don't have to worry about getting things developed. I can, you know, I have so much manipulatability or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, but that end result, that 8x10, you go, okay, maybe it looks a little better.
Well,
but.
Yeah. And you know what, though? A lot of the people back then in the film days, it was about simplicity in their mind. A lot of the reasons they didn't want to switch is because maybe they had the guy who dealt with the lab stuff for them, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They took the pictures, they handed the film over, and they got back something that was beautiful.
Right. I've got my printer that I use. I've got my processor that
right.
I use.
And now, absolutely. You know, and then with the digital transition, a lot of that weight shifted from somebody else back to you.
Right.
And a lot of people saw a lot of power in that, but I think a lot of people saw a lot of pain in that as well, you know?
Sure. And even now, I mean, you see different photographers. I mean, some people love, like you love doing your own stuff.
Yeah, right.
There are other photographers who that's not their interest. Their interest is more taking the picture, or, you know, then there are other photographers who, yeah, they take the picture, but it's really only a means to almost to get to the post-processing because they love the post-processing so much.
Right, exactly. You know?
But it's very strange, the shift that you just pointed out, where, because you're right, a lot of these people, they would take the picture and they wouldn't see it until it was final. And you'd have to find that person, that person that got what you were trying to get across and could get inside your head and give you that in return.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of a fascinating relationship that it was necessary then. It feels like it was necessary then, but it feels like it's optional now.
Sure. Well, it's whether or not you want to allow other people into your process, which you don't necessarily have to do anymore. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those old time photojournalists too would shoot, hand over their stuff and not even like see a picture in a magazine and not even realize it's theirs.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. They forget taking the shot. Like we all do. I just think, you know, I was always, I'm on the next computer all the time, you know, whatever the newest platform is, I'm jumping over to that. I've got the fastest CPU. A new one comes out, I'm jumping on that. New camera comes out, I'm jumping on that. And now it's like, I don't know if it's because everything has kind of flattened out and been very similar, but, you know, I bought this new camera, but I've had the same computer for what? You and I have had our machines for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's like, well, I don't have a need to jump to
whatever. I haven't done anything to it. I mean, you've at least upgraded your video card. I've done nothing to this machine.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fine. you know, for everything other than the stuff that you were trying to do that might be a little crazier in video or whatever, you know?
It's fine until I go into Windows and want to play games. Well, then it's not fine.
But you know what? $250 on a 1060 and you're right back in the running, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's not like that's a problem, but I don't know. It's interesting to me how these new things come up, and some people love to just jump on the new thing, and some people will fight tooth and nail to hold on to the old thing. And I was at the one end, and now I'm sort of in the middle, and I'm worried I'm going to be at the other end and be one of those crazy old people who won't give up the thing that's been out of date for 20 years because, you know, I'm crazy.
Or just not because you're crazy, but just because it works for you.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, your camera that you bought, it's already obsolete in some people's minds.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and next year when Sony makes their 150 megapixel sensor available, then you're going to have 150 megapixel, and the following year it's going to be 200 megapixel.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So at some point, you know, and we have talked about this many, many times, you get the tool that works.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, we were out in California and I had my X Pro and I had my phone. And I borrowed the X-T2, but I also got some terrific shots with my, what is it now, when did the X-Pro 1 come out? 6 years ago? 5 years ago?
5 years ago, maybe.
5 years
ago? Not that old.
Okay. So still 5 years. I mean, in technology years, that's how many generations?
Exactly. Yeah. But did you find yourself using your phone as much as the big one?
I used my phone 90% of the time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And that's really just going to get better. You know,
since we're on this quasi topic, did you see this article, the Vic Gundotra posts that he put on Facebook?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty bold statement from
the guy who used to run Android essentially. He used to run social at Google. His claim, for those of you who haven't read it, I'm going to put a link in the show notes on a 9to5 Mac article, but Vic Gundotra used to run all of social media at Google. He was a senior VP. He did not progress at Google. They kind of passed him over a couple times for bigger jobs, and eventually he kind of got fed up and left. I always liked him when he gave talks and stuff, and now he runs some other big company. I think he runs one of those health company kind of, you know, Internet of Things kind of health stuff. Anyway,
sure.
He wrote that his iPhone 7 Plus camera on a Facebook post, "The end of the DSLR for most people has already arrived. I left my professional camera at home and took these shots at dinner with my iPhone 7 using computational photography, portrait mode, as Apple calls it. Not hard to call these results stunning. Great job, Apple." And then somebody complained and said, you know, the Samsung camera is better. And he argued that the connection of software and hardware on the Apple phones gives it a distinct advantage. Now, he may have been just taking a swipe at his old boss who kind of screwed him over. Because a lot of people really love the new cameras, and the Samsung and the Pixel and all the rest of them are supposed to be amazing. But you know what's really interesting about all this is this idea of computational photography, right? The idea that pictures from your phone, if you took a picture with your phone in relatively good light and took a picture on my camera or your camera, the picture for the phone will look better right away. You know what I mean? Like, if you just look at it on your screen, it's going to look pretty good because they do a good job of tone mapping all these things and figuring it all out. My question is, how come there isn't more of these, more tools for professionals that will grab, say, the raw file out of your camera or my camera or a Mark III and pull the most out of that and create an image? You know what I mean? Sort of like auto awesome, really good data. You know what I mean? Like,
if
that's what you could do with the stupid little tiny chip that's in a phone, imagine what you could do with my sensor, you know?
Well, but aren't there, what's the Lumineer? Is it Lumineer, the new RAW converter that just came out?
Oh, there's a new RAW converter.
Is it Lumineer?
I'll look it up while you talk.
It's supposed to be like just this amazing piece of software, or Luminance, something like that. That does fantastic things with RAW conversion, and people are just kind of raving about it. the thing that I get, and I love the Apple ecosystem. I love it and I hate it. But I have a hard time, as we've always had as Apple users, discerning the real from the marketing.
Right.
You know, the few examples I've seen of the portrait mode, which is what he was referring to.
Have people with their hair next to their heads and easy to cut out stuff. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, show me somebody, you know, with their head out the window of a car and or something a little more complicated.
Yeah,
and then, then let's talk about it.
It falls apart.
Yeah.
Better, but it falls apart, you know? Hey, could it be the on one? Could
that be the one?
It's not
on one.
It's not one on one. Okay. All right. We'll have to find it. I'm using Google to try to Lumini.
Something like that.
There is a... All right, we'll find it.
Yeah.
And put it in the show notes. Oh,
Wait. Luminar. That's what it is.
Okay.
Made by a company called MacFun. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll put a link in the show notes. I have not seen this or played with it.
People are loving it, and it's out for Windows. I mean, if you look at some of the before and afters on their website, it looks pretty amazing.
Yeah. It is really interesting. It's one of the things I really like about digital photography at a high level, and especially raw stuff in general, is that these converters keep getting better and your data doesn't go anywhere. So if you have your raw files from the time you went to Japan 10 years ago, even your old camera, you bring it into a new raw converter and you can do stuff with those pictures you couldn't do 10 years ago.
Sure.
You know, and that's kind of neat. You know, this idea that we have like that much power in our hands, you know, and that we can go back and make something better that was recorded 10 years ago. You know, it's like it's like improving the resolution of a audio file after the fact. You know, it's kind of amazing.
Really makes the case for shooting in RAW instead of
absolutely.
Instead of JPEG.
It is, you know, but back to Vic's comments for a minute. It's like, you know what, for your average parent who's taking pictures of their kids in the backyard, just use your phone. You know, all the people who bought digital SLRs 10 years ago in order to take pictures of their kids, those people, absolutely. You know, like just use your phone. Within reason, you know, within the limits of it.
I think some of the most compelling photos that I've taken over the past several years have been with my phone.
Yeah. It looks great. You know, as long as you're okay with a slightly wide angled lens, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
you've got enough light.
Yeah. And if you've got enough light, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, part of it is just it's sort of the opposite of the, bigger camera in front of somebody and they take it more seriously thing, little camera in front of somebody and they take it less seriously. And that's actually a good thing sometimes, you know, because they'll play around in a way that they wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole sort of Daito Moriyama philosophy. You know, he made a conscious effort to walk around with this Ricoh GR so that people wouldn't pay attention to him and mug for the camera or turn away or raise a hand or whatever it is.
Sure,
it becomes just sort of unobtrusive to the point where you don't even notice it.
Yeah,
you know, or somebody like Kochi Hernandez, who most of his stuff is with his phone, and he's just ignored when he's out and about, and he ends up turning out these absolutely incredible photographs.
Yeah. And they do keep getting better. You know, it's pretty crazy. Hey, what are you thinking about the Jack White video? Where are you going with that?
This is really cool. I am a fan of both Jack White and of Adam Savage.
Yep.
And in Adam's latest episode of Tested, which is his YouTube show, he goes to visit Third Man Records, which is Jack White's retail store / record pressing plant, and apparently it's the first record pressing plant in the United States in more than 30 years.
Yeah.
And you can go, you can record and cut a record right in the location.
When Jeffrey says cut a record, he means literally a lathe will be cutting the record as you record.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And funny enough,
so-called direct to disc back in the day.
Yeah, I didn't know this. Adam was on stage. He recorded a tune while he was there. Yep. And they said, okay,
Adam, you're in the groove.
Oh, that's in the groove,
That's where that saying comes from.
Yeah, Yeah.
And it was just kind of cool. But it was in about midway through this thing. And it is 27
minutes long.
27 minutes long. And about mid, it's about the 10 minute mark.
Okay.
Adam starts to, you know, he's taken on a tour and he records his record and et cetera. But he's talking to Jack White, and Jack is, waxing poetic, no pun, about the sort of magic of analog and
wearing sunglasses and indoors while doing it.
Right. Well, because he's a rock star.
Yeah.
But the example that he gave, he said, you know, imagine a pencil on a piece of paper and you draw a line. It's a constant line. That's analog.
Yeah.
It's a constant stream. Whereas digital, take that pencil and draw a series of dots. It's a dotted line. And no matter what the sample rate is, there are still going to be gaps that the computer has to fill in.
Yes.
And I got to thinking about that in relation to photography. I mean, first of all, it's kind of a neat metaphor, but as it relates to photography and film versus digital, it is a chemical process. It is a light sensitive process versus an interpreted process. And I think when we talk about the film versus digital, are there people that can see a difference? Yeah, I think there are. You know, in the same way that I'm sure that people, you know, have sound systems with turntables that will sound absolutely amazing with the right hardware, the right, you know, environment. Sure. I'm sure it'll sound amazing. But I just thought about it in terms of not necessarily accuracy, because I know people are going to argue that digital cameras are much more accurate than...
As is digital recording, if you really,
Yeah.
In every measurable way, yeah.
But there's still something that is lost in that translation. There's still something that's lost in that interpolation.
Do you think that, mathematically... That is not true. But do you think that is true from like an emotional point of view and I don't mean it emotionally, like you're actually getting something different out of it, but that we as humans, we know how to make a mark. That's an intuitive thing. The idea of whatever digital recording does in audio or visual or whatever is something that is a black box that makes us removed from the sort of emotive feeling of making a mark on a cave wall. Does that make
maybe.
Sense?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. It's not us. It's the ghost in the machine that's doing the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not going to pretend to know the ins and outs of how it all works and, you know, technically it's better here or it's worse. But I know that there is a different feel.
Sure.
And there, in the same way that there is a different feel in using a Wacom tablet as opposed to cupping your hands under an enlarger lens to
sure.
burn or dodge.
Yep, yep, yep.
And it was just kind of an interesting metaphor. It was an interesting discussion around the way things were created then, because you knew you had, you know, 20 minutes to get this right. You didn't have 72 takes to get it right.
Yep.
In the same way with film, you've got 36 chances to get this shot. And if you miss it, well, that's it. It's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you a little story. One time I was at Sterling Sound, which is one of the big mastering houses in the world. It's in here in New York. And I was with Greg Calbee, and he took me into the lathe cutting room where they used to cut the actual masters for big records, you know? And, he says, you know, one of the cool things you can do, and he like sticks a piece of wax on there, and he puts the needle down, and he just goes up to it and he goes, "Hey!" Starts yelling at the needle, right? Like on the groove mm-hmm, as it's mm-hmm. cutting. And then he like runs it back and plays it, and you can hear him yelling.
Right.
Because wow. it moves the thing just enough to mark that in the groove. And I was like,
sure.
Okay. See, he's like, yeah, you have to be careful to have the actual room quiet while you're cutting the lathe. And I was like, oh, that's wow. a whole other level of stuff that
you don't think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. And this is the guy who mastered Born to Run. You know what I mean? Like
right,
this is
right,
you know,
right.
serious heavies. But yeah, it's okay. So what else is anything else he says, Jack?
I mean, it's just a good read or a good watch.
Okay.
The process of making the record, they take Adam through the process of recording it. They take him through the plant, showing them how the pellets are extruded.
Sure.
And it was just, you know, it was fascinating to me to see all the different steps that are required in terms of not only manufacturing, but then quality control.
Sure.
You know, they've got somebody whose job it is to just listen to records. And every, yeah. I think they said every 25th record gets listened to start to finish to make sure that the quality is still there. There's optical traces that they're looking for, imperfections. There are, you know, auditory quality controls. And I don't know. I used to love those shows, like How It's Made, where
So
this kind of taps into that for me to see, you know, the process of something that I have only recently rediscovered as a hobby.
Sure. It's also an interesting thing. I mean, it's a messy process making records. Whenever you see the old plants, there's always like vinyl all over the place, you know, because it like, you know, as it melts, it squeezes out the sides and there's a thing that cuts it around the edge and, you know.
Right.
And I think that in a similar way, to remember when they started the Impossible Project and they started trying to rebuild. They had the machines, but they didn't have the chemistry right, and the people running them were different. And it was a complicated process that Polaroid had made look easy because they had been doing it so long.
And we only saw the later years. We didn't see their trial and error.
Exactly. But the later year Polaroid, they had that stuff down to like a fine tooth, you know, a fine running motor, you know,
where
if you watch record making now, it feels very similar to the Impossible Project, where they're trying to recreate the wheel a little bit. And
I don't know, man, you watch this thing, their shop is like a clean room.
Oh, yeah.
But they recycle everything, like all the trimmings that they come out, they recycle. Oh, yeah.
They melt it down. Sure.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. This one, it's probably cause this one is such like a new, because they are, it's like this like new place. Man, the old ones, there's videos online of like the old record plants that like Sony and stuff used to print their stuff at. And I mean, like they'd been running for 40 years, you know, the same machines, which I bet you, like when they had to make new ones, I bet you they were the new parts. Yeah, I bet you they machined parts, you know, to custom fix things, you know, that were old.
Go take a look at it though.
How much does he charge for the records that come out of there? They charge a lot of money.
I think they're in the 20s range, but he also does this thing called the vault where you pay quarterly.
Okay.
And it is, I think it's $60 a quarter, and they send you, X number of pressings per quarter.
Okay.
Like the last one, it was vault package number 33. And they had this whole like 10th anniversary Icky Thump vinyl collection. And it had like, you know, like B-sides. And there was like, I think the records were red and white and red and black vinyl.
Sure.
And it was like this whole thing. But you can only sign up for, you know, a certain number of days before the cutoff. And I missed out on that one. But they've had like, you know, they've also got a concert stage there. So they've had like Pearl Jam come in and do a concert, and they release that as one of their things. You get access to live chats with Jack White and, you know, streaming. If they have special events, you can watch them. So it's kind of neat, but I think their regular records are 15, 20, 25, something in there.
Earlier this year, I went and spent some time with Michael Fremer, who's the analog audio guy for Stereophile magazine at his house.
And
I'll have to see if he has listened to any of these pressings and see what he thinks of them, you know, just from his
long
scale point of view. I'll send him an email and see what he has to say. It's interesting. I mean, you know, we used to have tons and tons and tons of vinyl around our house when I was a kid, because my father in the record stores, I mean, we would bring it home, but he would also get promos from all the companies. So we used to get a box of records from Capitol twice a week, you know.
Wow.
You know, with four or five, whatever the new releases were.
Did you keep any of it?
Me personally, no. Melissa, my sister kept, I don't know, probably a few hundred. records. A lot of it was 80s reissued Blue Note stuff, which actually were not great reissues. They weren't great pressings because they had done a lot of early terrible digital transfers that were not very good and then made the discs from those and all kinds of stuff.
I thought digital was supposed to be better.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Back in the 80s, they did this a little too fast. But it's it's interesting. And I've never gone back to the record player thing just because it's a little too work intensive for me. But I go in the middle where I've ripped my CDs and I listen to them, but I'm not a streaming guy. Here's see, Jeffrey, this is an example of what we were talking about earlier. Like, I'm in the middle somewhere where I'm like,
you're in the middle.
Goddamn, these kids, they don't even know what an album is. They just stream singles. And, you know,
can I tell you one of the things I love about having a record player now is it is as much a timer as it is a device just to get listening pleasure out of.
18 or 20 minutes aside. Whatever it is.
I can go, okay, I need to write today. I need to get some writing done. So I can go, okay, I'm going to go write for 20 minutes. I can put on a record, any record.
Yep.
And just go sit and write. When it's done, I get up and I go do something else. It's gotten me back into the habit of writing for pleasure again. Yep.
Vinyl is also really weird because the first song on a side sounds better than the last songs on the side because there's more linear inches of record because it's spinning at the same speed, but it's going smaller and smaller circles in the middle. So it's actually kind of going slower in the middle, as it were. So that there's actually more distortion and stuff in the later songs on a side. And they would actually think about that kind of stuff when they were putting songs in order on a record because they wanted certain things to sound better than others. You know, it's just, it's crazy. The stuff that the workarounds we came up with back in the day that people forgot about, you know, or haven't really thought about since
then. Art loves limitations, man.
It's true. It's very, very true. Do you want to do the universe doesn't care about your purpose or do you want to?
Sure.
Yeah.
So does it not?
I guess this article I think we just did a drive by last week to say everyone to read it by a guy named Joseph Carter talking about the need for human need for purpose, right? And and how that relates to happiness, and that purpose seems to be beneficial in overcoming like substance abuse, healing from tragedy and loss, economic success. You know, all this kind of stuff comes into feeling like there's a reason why you're doing it, right? This is happiness in work and in relationships and all the rest of it. And I asked you, Jeffrey, what you think of the idea of purpose. Does it need to be something that comes to you, or could it be something you choose somewhat arbitrarily? As long as it's a goal in the distance for you to walk towards, that's enough, you know?
Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, sure.
I think purpose. I don't think purpose is for everyone. I think there are plenty of people who go through life without a specific purpose or calling or goal or whatever end point you want to use for that, and are absolutely as happy as they could be. And I am sometimes envious of those people, because I am not that way. I feel like there has to be some sort of meaning. There has to be some sort of, purpose to what I'm here for.
Right.
And, you know, oftentimes that purpose will be, interpreted as religious in nature. There's a very famous book by Rick Warren called Purpose Driven Life, which is a terrific book. There are parts of it that are very, very good, and that spoke to me very deeply. But I think one of the problems with these things is you put all of your eggs into that one basket, and that becomes the answer rather than an answer.
Whatever purpose you choose or chooses you,
yes,
becomes the answer.
Yes, yes. And I think your purpose can change. I think it should change. You know, if you're you know, 21 years old and have everything figured out and know exactly what you're going to do or want to do or have to do. I mean, that's great. But on the other hand, you might be missing out on, you know, a lot of things at the periphery because sure. you're so convinced that this has to be the thing.
Yeah.
And I've had several of the thing that I had to pursue in my life. And I'm grateful that I did, because I think that my life has, I have a colorful backstory, and I have a number of experiences and influences and inspirations and skills that I would have missed out on if I put blinders on and just followed one of this myriad of opportunities that I've had.
Right.
But I don't feel like there is an overall purpose to my life.
Singular purpose.
Yeah. Other than maybe, I mean, maybe it is to connect and share stories. Maybe that's it. Maybe.
But that feels like a more recent observation of yourself.
Not really. I mean, look, I mean, what was it? A few episodes ago, I told you about writing a letter to JPL wanting to interview Carl Sagan.
Sure.
You know, that was high school.
Right.
And I think my love of story came from my grandparents and my relatives who were talkers. They were storytellers, and it made me appreciate how connected you can feel to that. But there are other people that they don't care about that. It doesn't interest them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, a purpose, that's a big word.
Yeah. I guess, does it have to be a big word? It also seems like there are, you and I tend to talk about, I've met a bunch of listeners of ours, as have you.
Yep.
Many of whom will say, you know, you guys talk about, oh, I'm going to go whole hog and into whatever it is. Well, you know what? I can't do that. I've got kids and I've got, you know what I mean? A house, and I got to pay a mortgage and whatever the thing is. Right. That for them, there are other purposes, right? But even that, those people are struggling towards that goal, whatever whether that goal is family or financial independence or what have you, right? I mean, there's a billion goals we could list in the Western world.
Sure.
All equally valuable in the general sense, but not equally valuable in the personal sense, right? You know what I mean? I'd rather be happy than rich. There's a lot of people who'd rather be rich than happy, you know, or rather be rich than struggle, you know what I mean? For fear, like their fears are different. And I think sometimes purpose comes down to being the opposite of whatever your fears are, you know? I fear of not using my life, the time I have, wisely, you know?
So what does that mean?
What does anything mean? I fear looking back on myself and thinking, oh, well, that's all you did with the time that you had. You worked a job. Like when I had my realization 10 years ago that I didn't want to do advertising anymore, it's like, I don't want to sell stuff. I don't care, you know, about this. I'm going
to
go.
But everything's a sliding scale. To another person, that may be a fantastic purpose. And they would look at you and go, what are you taking a bunch of pictures?
No. That's exactly my point. Is that for me, it's one thing. For you, it's another. For Joe Schmo, it's a third. And for Jane Schmo, it's a fourth. Right? But a lot of it comes down to, I do think that you need to find something in life that you are putting your energy towards. I think even the people you mentioned at the beginning who you don't think have a purpose, I think they have a purpose. It just might not be what you would call a purpose, right?
Wait, who did I mention before?
Not any specific person. You said there are people have, I forget exactly how you put it. I think you said there are people who don't.
Maybe it's not apparent to me.
Exactly. Right. Their purpose may be getting up and staring at their kid every morning or whatever it is that they're doing. Right. So So I think that one person's purpose is another person's silliness, you know, and in every regard and in every way. But I do think that the nature of having goals as humans is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes in the absence of anyone that really sticks out to you, making a silly arbitrary goal, like, you know, you deciding to make your book. It's like, well, you know, it wasn't, you didn't know where that was going to end up, but you just said, no, I'm going to finish this book and I'm going to do it. Right.
Right.
You know, or me doing my daily thing this year. It's like, am I going to get a medal at the end of it? No, but I'm going to have a 365 things that I've actually done this year. You know what I mean? So like for me, that is purpose enough for it. In the absence of something else that speaks to me from the outside, I'll come up with something internal to make my days less empty, I guess, in my own head.
Right. Well, and then there's the things that you don't see coming.
Right.
You know? My life has been made so much richer by the things that I didn't plan on. You know? And it's, you know, we get feedback for doing the show. We get people saying, hey, if you're into, you know, a listener, his wife had a painting at a gallery show here in DC over the weekend, and emailed and said, hey, I don't know if this is possible or if you're, you know, willing or it, but I'd love to meet up with you. And it's like, well, of course I will. Of course. Yeah. I mean, why would I not? This is one of the things that drives me. Is connecting and sharing. And now I have this story to share, this encounter, this connection that happened because of staring and speaking into a microphone
very much in line with your overall goal of telling stories and meeting people, right?
Sure.
In the same way mine is. I there's other people I listen to on podcasts who, you know, won't have a phone call unless they have a thing on a calendar 3 weeks in advance. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So you know, that is, you and I will agree that that is a good use of purpose, but there are plenty of other people who disagree, you know? I just think that I agree with this person's writing in the sense that I don't think that the universe cares that I do what I do. But I think in order to give structure and meaning to my own life, I have to have a thing that I'm working towards, because if I don't, it really grinds me down.
Aristotle believed that the universe is saturated with it, that everything has an intrinsic drive. Our word purpose comes from the Greek telos, a goal that stipulates what and how something needs to be. For Aristotle, the universe and everything in it has an essential directive. Any deviation from it belies truth and reality. That's a tough one for me because it kind of takes away free will.
Well, I think he's pointing out that Aristotle had this theory that oversat reality, but it doesn't change the fact that reality doesn't care. This is the way Aristotle found purpose, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is in its own way kind of interesting, like that the idea of purpose is itself somebody's purpose.
right.
You know, I think we all try to make structure out of what is essentially randomness in our lives in many ways. You know, we try to create these things over the top of it, which is why it hurts so much when something terrible happens out of the blue. You know, somebody gets hit by a car or something. You know what I mean? Then we're just like, wait, that doesn't fit into this narrative that I've created.
Right.
Like, wait, yeah. I didn't write that chapter.
That's out of the order that this should fall under.
Right. Which is why it disturbs us so much when it happens.
Right.
You know? And again, you're right that you can't plan for everything to happen. And I'm certainly not in the world of looking for things to plan, but until that thing comes from the outside, I'll make it up for myself. And then if something better comes from the outside, changing it. I think what you said earlier about you've had multiple purposes in your life over time. I don't think that having purpose in your life means that is your purpose for your entire life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that shifting that or this actually goes back to the beginning. I feel like each one is a little bit of a technology that you hop from one to the other when one becomes greater in your mind, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
You know, CSS can do it now. I don't need Flash anymore. So
right.
See a purpose number one, you know.
There's a here. The purposes and goals we create in this article are phantom bodies, vestiges of and memorials to the people, places, and things we stand to lose and strive to keep.
Yes.
Purpose indexes the world's impermanence, namely our own. Sure, my grandfather's T-Bird will function well as transportation once I'm finished, but that goal only makes sense as an enduring reminder of the stories and memories of him.
Yes.
Purpose is about loss, or at least the circumvention of it, and there's nothing wrong with that. We create purposes to establish happy endings in a universe where endings are simply that, endings.
It's actually really well written.
Yeah, it is. It's a terrific piece. New York Times piece, for those of you who want like to take a look at it.
Yeah, yeah. I put it in the show notes again. Yeah, I don't know. I think, and to be more specific to our show, trying to find artistic meaning, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out what it is about whatever kind of art or whatever kind of pictures you take. Why is it street photography? Why is it macro photography? Why is it portraits? Why is it black and white film and not digital color? You know what I mean? Like, why do we choose these things in order to give what the things that we make more have it, let them have more meaning to us, you know? They're as varied as the people who listen right now. And I just think that that's kind of neat that.
No, it's great. I mean, it's yeah.
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 Goal oriented behavior. It's like, the Unabomber thing again, right? Where, you know, humans.
How is it like the Unabomber?
You ever read the Unabomber Manifesto? It's actually kind of interesting. Basically,
I have not.
His argument was that humans have gotten lazy because technology and things are taking away from us the struggle to survive. And the struggle to survive is part of what made us happy as individuals, like that we're bred and created in order to satisfy needs. And it's satisfying those needs that makes us happy. And now when you can make satisfying those needs as easy as clicking one click on Amazon, that's why we're all so depressed all the time.
I think there are plenty of people still struggling to survive, and the people that have the luxury and good fortune to only be concerned about one click settings on Amazon it's a very small percentage.
Oh, it is. I think he was talking about the Western world though. He was talking sort of like about the modern, you know, Western world, which, you know, the man was crazy, but it's an interesting theory, you know, and it's not, you know, why do we have all these antidepressants and, you know, all this stuff? Like maybe it was all around before, it probably was, but we have no way to measure that, you know, over time. But anyway, so yeah, in some ways he made a good point, as crazy as he was, which is why he was trying to kill mathematicians and stuff.
Right. Purpose is an interesting discussion.
I
wouldn't mind circling back around that.
All right, I wrestle
with it because I think I have pissed away opportunities that will never be there again, and have spent a large portion of my life course correcting because of it.
What do you mean pissed away? That's a very strong term.
But yeah, well, yeah. Either bridges that I burned or opportunities that were in front of me that I chose for one reason or another not to take.
Okay.
And they could have been opportunities for, you know, jobs or you know, travel, whatever it is. I don't know. But I feel like creatively I have spit in the face of inspiration and opportunity so many times. And then afterward I go, well, wait a minute now. Now that that's gone, now what do I do?
Because you didn't think you were worthy, because you didn't think the opportunity was worthy.
Sure, there's probably part of that in there. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. I could write a whole other book about what I do or don't deserve.
If they asked me, I could write a book.
So yeah, I need to think about this some more.
Okay. I think that that is a worthwhile endeavor of ours.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's think about it. We'll spin back around next time.
Yeah.
We should talk about our sponsor, Squarespace, today.
Squarespace.
Make your next move, Jeffrey.
I'm trying to, man. I'm trying to.
Squarespace is
wait, is that the new thing? That's the still the thing, right?
What?
Make your own website. Yeah, make your own website. That now that's the thing.
Oh, is that what they say on their website?
Yeah. The summer refresh is also here. 16 new templates.
Are those some of the templates that we discussed a couple weeks ago?
Yep.
Okay.
There are some new ones. There are some that have been renamed.
Okay.
From what I can see.
Which is an interesting move.
Yeah. Like there was one.
One of the new ones or one of the old ones?
Yeah, there's one called Shift, and now it's called Burke.
Burke.
And unless it's a different one, because it looks to my mind the same. It's got the guy snowboarding down the mountain.
Oh, right. I remember Shift. Sure.
Remember that?
Maybe people didn't like the name.
Maybe. I don't know.
Jeffrey's talking about the beautiful award-winning designer templates that Squarespace had to build your website on, which is how many do they list how many they've got there? I mean, it's now a lot, right?
Yeah. I don't know how many total. They just added 16 new ones for the summer.
So you could find one of them that's going to fit your needs, whether you're a designer.
You would have to be able to find one.
Exactly. Or a photographer or a restaurant or a...
or like Amir Miller, you're an hotel. Actor and a model.
Or an actor, model, or brand ambassador. You can create a beautiful website or online store with this award-winning template. They're beautiful. They work on phones. They're cross-platform. They're responsive. They look great. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever because it's all in Squarespace's all-in-one platform. So they take care of the software behind the scenes and fix any security holes that come up or any weird glitches. They're like fixing it constantly. They're working on it. They've got award-winning 24/7 customer support. You can email or chat with them any time of the day. I think, what did they say? It was in New York and in Portland, I think it was. Remember when they used to talk about that?
Yeah, their data centers. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now they sell domains, Jeffrey. So like you could host your domains right there with Squarespace. And it's a unique domain experience that's fully transparent, simple to set up, and is flexible for any kind of website. Squarespace is used by a wide range of creatives, people, businesses, musicians, designers, restaurants, artists, and more. I use Squarespace for BillWadman.com. For what it's worth.
I use Squarespace for JeffreySidoris.com. That's where
there
it's
you
at.
Go. And, what the greatest part about it is that it really is easy moving stuff, playing with new templates. You know what's nice about it, Jeffrey? I have yet to break a Squarespace thing. You know what I mean? Like where I'm playing around with it. I'm like moving stuff around. I'm clicking. Like I'll make it look not the way I want it to for a few minutes, but I've never made it to where Squarespace goes, oh yeah, you just really mucked things up now, buddy. You know? Cause so it's good in that way. Cause I've done that in the past with other things that I've worked on, especially when I've had too much deep access to the code.
Right.
Go start your free trial at squarespace.com today. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP and you'll get 10% off your first purchase and you'll show your support for our show on Taking Pictures.
Yay!
Squarespace is great. And we thank very much for their support of 5x5 and on Taking Pictures. That's us. So Squarespace, make your new website. They're good people over there too. Although I think little Ryan left, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think he left last year.
Where did he go?
I don't know. Got to find out. Got to find out where little Ryan went off.
Is Derek still there?
I do believe Derek is still there because, when my stuff comes up for renewal, I call Derek and he takes care of it. He's good like that.
Well, Ryan, I hope you're happy.
I think he moved up in the world. He took over, a cruise ship or something.
Is that the step up from Squarespace to cruise ship?
Have you been on a cruise ship?
Is that the upgrade path? No. God, no. Why would I go on a cruise ship?
I don't get them. I know there's probably listeners who are like, oh my God, cruise ships are the best. I just hear the horror stories of norovirus and
come
on.
What have you heard? When have you ever heard a norovirus story?
About cruise ships all the time.
Last 10 years.
It's actually happened a lot the past few years. One person gets on a boat. 38% of the boats just like, you know, puking off the side. No, thank you. Years ago, I used to do work for Royal Caribbean and Celebrity Cruises. And I once got a tour of one of the celebrity cruise ships, like the bowels of the ship and like went into the kitchens and stuff like that. It is amazing, though, the level at which they do the work on those planes. Holy cow.
Right.
It's amazing. Although they're paying like these like Filipino national people like $30 a day to work on the ships, you know, which is kind of stinky. We are an hour 10 in. Where do you want to go? You want to talk about...
You want to keep this guy, this John, or do you want to save John for next time?
Well, you know what? Why don't we save John for next week's Photographer of the Week, okay. And then we'll do Gus today, and then we'll go to the group.
All right.
And make it
very
nice...
cool Photographer of the Week next week.
Yeah, no, it's totally cool. I agree with it, Jeffrey. I just figured we might as well use him and talk about him for a little longer.
No,
let's go look at the assignments here from last week.
So
collage composite. Ooh, some of these are funky.
The assignment was a collage composite, and where it came from.
Wow, Nick Gove.
We were talking about David Hockney's pictures, particularly Pear Blossom Highway.
Yeah.
Somebody either sent us, did they post, one of Tom Petty's albums included this cool collage kind of composite picture.
Yeah,
in
I'll have to
Who
find
was that,
that? And put in the show notes. Somebody did, who did do that? Let me see. I'll find it because, you know, it's funny. I was actually looking at Chicago. I use an app called Vox on my phone.
Okay.
To do instead of the music app on my phone, just because I want to do the local music on the phone and it stinks on the stupid Apple thing now. And I found this crazy here. I'm going to send it to you in Skype here, Jeffrey, so you can see it. This crazy Chicago cover shows up as the image for Chicago in the app because I guess it just pulls some sort of weird thing. You see that one? This crazy composite of all the band members in Chicago basically kind of riding on a motorcycle out of town with the cop chasing them.
Looks like they've stolen this motorcycle. Looks like the cop's motorcycle.
Yeah, but it's actually a pretty cool composite, right? Like
it's good.
It's like really well done. So
wait, is that the official thing or is that just what this app grabs?
That was the official Chicago 10 album cover, I think. And then... this is just what, for some reason, Vox chose this as like the picture of Chicago on there.
So what Vox will play any of the music that you have on your phone? Is
that
the deal?
Any of the music you have synced to your phone. I just didn't like the interface of the Apple thing. It would put in stuff that I didn't put into my music. And I said, I just want the local stuff. And it'd be like, here's all these artists that you've never heard of. And somehow they're in my lineup. And I'm like, I don't even have these on my iTunes. I don't know if they're like free marketing things inside of Apple Music or whatever. It just drove me crazy. So I use Vox.
And
yeah.
Is it free? Do you have to pay for
it? It's free. Yeah.
And will it pick up your Apple Music?
Yeah. Well, it'll pick up the local music you have on your phone.
But nothing in the cloud.
Not that I know of. I think it also connects to SoundCloud somehow, but I don't use it for any of that kind of stuff. I really just wanted a nice player for my local music. And so I use this Vox thing. Anyway, so I'll find the Tom Petty album cover thing and I'll put that in the show notes too while you're looking down these. Let me find it. Somebody, we must have...
Nick Govis, you went kind of crazy on this one. This is awesome.
Oh, it was Bruce DeBolt put it in here.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Bruce.
Yep.
Papaya King, nice. All kinds of places that you've been.
Papaya King, some good what's it called in there?
Hot dogs. Well, of course, if you want a good hot dog, you go to Papaya King.
In New York? Yep.
Nice. Robert, nice pictures. Nice pictures of some family pictures, some pressed flowers.
See this one Larry Shapiro put up of this bridge? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Larry Shapiro, Andy Duncan.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, these are really neat. Adam Campbell. Reminded me of this quick collage, bunch of snapshots taken from the roof of the USX Tower in Pittsburgh. That's super neat. Look at that.
Oh, where's that one? Let me see. I see. Look at that. Yeah.
Very cool.
This is a hard one.
Yeah, it is a hard one.
But they did a good job on it.
Yeah, Dennis, good one. Larry Shapiro. Oh, no, we already talked about Larry. Florian, good one. Yeah, a lot of fun stuff in here.
I think this is fun.
What do you got for the next one?
A funky idea for this week's assignment.
Hit me.
I want to see what people take. It's going to be hashtag simultaneous.
Okay.
And we're going to have listeners. Now, theoretically, if we really were going to do this, we'd have it be a specific moment in time. So it would be, you know, 6 o'clock on California, 9 o'clock on the East Coast, and, you know, 4 in the morning in England or whatever. But we're not going to do that because that's crazy. But we're going to choose a time. Let's say this Saturday at 7 p.m., everyone takes a picture where they are at 7 p.m. on Saturday, this Saturday, and put it up.
7 p.m. this Saturday.
And they put it up. So it's like, you know, it's where each person is and what they're doing at 7 p.m. at the same time on the same, you know, on the same day.
And okay, 7 p.m. What is that?
Well, see, I figured if you actually make it the UTC thing, then that gets crazy because people would have to be up in the middle of the night.
Oh, okay. So your local 7 p.m.
Yeah. I think that's a safer thing, right? Because then, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like that, I think that'll work better. And I just want to see what everyone comes up with.
Yeah. Saturday night, 7 p.m.
Yep.
Where are you? What are you doing?
In fact, if you want, we could actually name the thing hashtag, you know, 7 p.m. and see what happens.
Yeah. 7 p.m. Saturday, 7 p.m.
Yeah. Here, write that in there.
I'll do that.
I'll fix it. Okay. Yeah.
Saturday, 7 p.m. What is Saturday?
Saturday, 7 p.m. This Saturday is what is the day of the week? I mean, the day of the week. What is the week?
Well, I think what it's Saturday, Bill. Today's the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. 12th. Saturday the 12th.
Saturday the 12th at 7 p.m. And let's see what everyone's doing at the same time in their world. You know what I mean?
That's kind of cool.
I think it's going to be something different. Not just a theme, but a whole thing.
I might be in the park.
All right. Well, let's see what you got.
You know, because Saturday in the
Saturday.
Park.
Saturday. Yep, it's because I said Chicago.
Yeah, it is.
But wait, it's not the 4th of July.
You'll think it was.
Yeah. Photographer of the week is someone who, we're going back to this well, who died recently.
Are you sure?
Yes. No, this one's for sure. Right. August 2nd, 2017. His name was Gustav Peterson, but apparently they called him Gus. Was a Swedish photographer who moved over here when he was a young adult and started shooting fashion photography for The Times and pretty much everybody
else.
Look
at that picture of Naomi Sims.
I know, wow. Right? And it's interesting, though, when you read his bio, Jeffrey, and this is, again, an interesting example of the way the world really works, is that he left Sweden and he moved to New York in 1948. So he was 25 years old. And he got a job as an illustrator at Lord & Taylor. He had a camera, a Rolleiflex, that he was given as a present from the agency that he was working in Sweden when he moved over to America. And he just started shooting street photography. And in 1954, when he was, 33 years old or so, he met his wife, who turned out was the fashion editor at the New York Times, at a cocktail party out in the Hamptons. Apparently, he was wearing khaki pants and watering flowers at the party. They met, he married the same year, and Peterson credits her with helping him jumpstart his career as a photographer.
Why was he watering flowers?
I don't know. It doesn't say.
Maybe he was just pouring out a drink.
Maybe. Yeah, he's just like, this whiskey's
this
terrible.
Gin and tonic is, it's awful. Yeah.
In the 50s, he took several assignments from the magazine, picking up the nickname Yes for his willingness to take on assignments. And after his wife became VP at Henri Bendel, the later company changed its advertising from illustrations to half-page advertorials using his photographs. So basically, she moved over to another advertising firm and kept hiring her husband.
Wow.
I will say that there are a number of famous photographers who are married to assignment editors at different magazines and newspapers that I know of, who get work just this way. But his work is absolutely lovely. He was the first photographer to shoot Twiggy in America when she arrived in 1967, the famous super thin model Twiggy, who nowadays looks thin, but not nearly as thin as she looked back in 1967.
Right, or not so. Nearly as thin as some models
people do today. Have,
beautiful pictures.
Stylist change. You know what's interesting? This Vogue link here, Jeffrey, where if you flip through these, his use of space and very much wide angle lenses is really interesting. Like the number 5 in that list, where it's the girl on the bike on the ground.
Yep.
You know, it's
yeah. Her head looks giant.
Right. You're really messing with perspective by using these wide angle lens. But the interesting thing he's doing, and the thing that I really will try and take away from this, is the idea that he's using all the space inside the shot in the wide angle lens, and to hell with the perspective being wrong, as long as it's interesting. You know, like that's the problem a lot of people have with really wide angled lenses, that they're not actually using all of the space. And so you end up with this thing that's really distorted and then a whole lot of empty space.
Right. Doing that real exaggerated intentional distortion, like we talked about with Bill Brandt last week, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So a lot of really crazy 60s mod fashion and stuff, which is just kind of crazy. Man, some of these clothes are really funny with pineapples all over them and stuff. The 70s. Beautiful, beautiful work. Black and white and color, but man, a lot of amazing color stuff. Like obviously certain kinds of film, you know, of the era. So you get these kinds of tones. But I really love that first one, Fly Girls on the Vogue list with the three girls in the shot.
It's terrific.
You could imagine a behind the scenes version of that wouldn't look nearly as cool. You know, like these three women put your head there. No. A half an inch forward. No, back, you know, you could totally see that, but it totally works for our purposes. So very innovative, very cool fashion stuff from the 60s. Gus Peterson died, recently, and, we used him as photographer of the week. So go check him out.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, be sure you check the show notes because there are some really terrific pieces in here. Although the slideshow, does the slideshow work for you?
On New York Times?
Yeah.
Or on Vogue?
If you click on the picture, the little slideshow icon of Twiggy?
Oh, yes, I get 1 of 10. Oh, and I just get the 1 of 10.
Yeah. I don't get any navigation.
It's strangely posterized, right? That image. It's weird.
Arrows don't work.
All right. Well, we'll have to.
Yeah.
We'll have to let the Times know. Maybe it's because it's the mobile version. Maybe try loading it without mobile as the prefix. See if that makes any difference.
Okay. See if that does anything.
See, we're.
Oh yeah, much better.
Okay.
Good job, Wadman.
Then I'll put it in as www. And add that to the thing.
Oh wow! Yeah, take a now that we can see these, take a look through these. Look at number 3.
Oh, the girl with her tongue out.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's the full shot of Naomi.
Wow! Look beautiful. At that. Look at that. You know, a lot of this stuff, like these crazy capes and things people used to wear. Oh.
Shot of Dali.
Gotta go weird with Dali, right? Girls in roller skates.
Look at the Cub Scouts are, all with the crazy mirrored sunglasses.
That's weird.
Yeah, this is great. Make sure you check this out, the Times article. There are some really wonderful pictures in here.
Yeah, he's very, very cool and very, very different, and I kind of like it. If you want to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411, you can leave a voicemail, and podcast@ontakingpictures.com will send us an email to Jeffrey and I. And let's see what else. At Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey Sidoris on Instagram and Twitter. And I think that's it. Anything else?
No, I think I'm going to need to think about some of this stuff and circle back around to it.
The purpose stuff?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to it next week.
All right. Yeah. Have a good week, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Yep.
We appreciate it. We know that there are lots of terrific podcasts out there, and we appreciate you taking the time to listen to this one.
Oh, we're back to that, all right?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
let us See, know now, if we're in your top 3 or 5.
I wish you had your
five.
Keyboard out so you could play us out. That's what yeah. I feel like I'm missing.
Well, I'm actually not in Brooklyn. I'm in Stonington, Connecticut at the moment.
I know, but we got to do that. You got to.
Ironically enough, a mile away from me is my actual piano.
There you go.
So I'll just run over there. Give me 7 to 9 minutes and I'll, I'll be right back.
All right.
We'll see you later.
That's going to do it. Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
All right.
See you.
Bye.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Tried to make it